Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The mistreatment of Africans in China predates the coronavirus outbreak, but there appears to be ample evidence that cases of racism are on the increase, from landlords kicking out African tenants to bus and taxi drivers refusing to accept African clients. A week ago, the authorities in the Guangdong region drew up a series of anti-discriminatory guidelines following a meeting with concerned African diplomats. So, what difference have they made? Maximus Ogbonna is president of the Association of the Nigerian Community in China. He told James Kumarasamy how the recent problems had begun.
In late March, the news was flying that the problems they have now about the virus were from foreigners, you know. So they begin to isolate or quarantine foreigners, you know, living in the city of Guangzhou.
And in particular, Africans.
Exactly, because there was a restaurant, African restaurant. It was found that there was a person there who tested positive for the COVID-19. And they think that Africans go there to eat, to relax and have their drinks. And so they suspect maybe most Africans might have, you know, got the virus.
And that led to people being kicked out of their homes, Africans not being allowed on public transport and in taxis. This was quite serious, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I need to tell you, this is not a directive from the Chinese central government, you know. They were locals. The locals were acting this on their own, you know, because they were afraid.
And this led to a meeting between African diplomats and the authorities and a new set of guidelines in place.
Now, the taxi drivers should not discriminate against black people again, have to take black people, and house owners have to, you know, rent their houses to black people. And bus drivers, you know, they need to allow, you know, black people to enter the buses in different malls and shopping centers, you know. So these are the measures they have put out to curb the problem here.
And are there punishments in place if people refuse to do that? If someone refuses to take a black person in his cab, or is it just a guideline? Is it just a recommendation?
Yes, about 2 days ago, I spoke with a high place authority here, and he told me that there's a punishment, for example, if the taxi driver doesn't allow or refuse to take a black person, he will be expelled. And if a security man refuses to allow a black person to a shopping mall or supermarket, he will be dismissed from his work.
And is it making any difference?
Yes, it's improving. Things are improving here. So, for example, the Guangzhou authorities, they brought out hotels, you know, where they put all the people who were evicted from the various houses. And people are living in those hotels free of charge. So these are one of the measures, improvement.
You've lived in China for some time. You're married to a Chinese woman, I think, and have two children. For you, what's your experience been of living in China as an African man?
I like China quite all right, but, you know, China is growing from day to day, you know, they're becoming more powerful from time to time. But they need to do more and to improve the situation of things, you know, and they need to do more to make the things they do international standard. For example, they need to increase my permit. They only give me visa once in a year, you know. After 1 year, I have to drive for about 5 hours, apply for visa again, and wait to stay in a hotel. After 10 days, I will get the visa back. So that, I think that's where I'm feeling bad, that's my experience here as an African man living here.
Maximus Ogbonna, president of the Association of the Nigerian Community in China.
Context of white supremacy, program number 2 on the counter-racist grind. We just finished up our neutralizing workplace racism literally about 1 hour ago. Should be available online, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Black Talk Radio Network, and other outlets where you get your podcasts. We finished up neutralizing workplace racism. We'll be here tomorrow, normal time, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, for the compensatory call-in. And we will be here on Sunday at noon, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, this coming Sunday for our Global Sunday Talk on Racism. Wow, it has been 2 months since we had that program. I am super excited to hear how things have changed for folks in different locations from the time that we spoke to them last time. But hopefully no glitches should be going down this coming Sunday. In the meantime, our second broadcast of the day, thought it would be constructive. There's been so much confusion and people trying to just get a grasp of what is happening with the so-called COVID-19 virus. I am of the opinion the system of racism, white supremacy is global. It is great to be able to talk to non-white people in different parts of the world to get a better understanding of what racism, white supremacy is, how it works, what it means to be white. As this COVID-19 crisis is global, spectacular opportunity to talk to folks in different parts of the world, especially since there is confusion, doubt, suspicion about what is being reported. Well, all the more reason to try to triangulate information, see what's being reported in different parts of the world. What do they think? What are their prospects, vaccine talk, all of that. Thought it would be great. We could check back in with one of our listeners in the area of the world known as China. He's been with us twice before. I think it's important, Dr. Welsing. She talked about us being attempted counter-racist scientists and saying, hey, we should be using logic to try to understand the world in which we live, dominated by racism, and we should get to a point where we feel confident enough, competent with our understanding of what is happening, that we can make accurate projections. That was why she boldly asserted that President Donald Trump, it comes from China. She predicted that he was going to be in the White House. Our caller in China predicted back in March, roughly a month before the report started coming out about black people being overrepresented in the number of deaths from the coronavirus in the United States. And that started to be reported in the United Kingdom as well. We just talked about that with Toyin Agbetu earlier this week. And in Brazil, we should have Marquise Treve on the program next Tuesday, live from Brazil, new hotspot as well. So, global, but predictions. Our listener today predicted this was going to be the case in the U.S. for a number of reasons for black people. I think that is important. I remember that pretty early on once they said, wow, black people in Chicago and New Orleans are being hit hard. So it'll be interesting to see some of his thoughts now that we've had about a good month and a half of those type of reports coming out and being talked about in different parts of the world. Real pleasure to have him back with us again. He's been overseas teaching students in China. Grew up in the States, still has family in the States. Hoot to have him back on the program with us. His third time joining us, our black male victim of white supremacy in China. Are you with us, sir?
Yes, sir. How you doing, Gus?
Hanging in, double duty for the day. For you, it is Saturday at noon, I think. It's a little bit just after noon on Saturday, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Beautiful day today, too, by the way.
Look at that. Look at that. Look at that. And he said he was just outside, too, while we lames here in the States are still, well, some of us, some place, depends on where you are, but a good chunk of us, we're still under quarantine and got a shelter in place and all that. He's been outside horsing around, getting packages and all the rest, bragging about the good day. Before I guess we hop into everything, I'm sure for some folks this might be their first time hearing you. Maybe they missed the archives of your visit from earlier this year and then some years back. Why are you over in China? How long have you been there again? One more time.
Okay. Been in China over 12, 13 years, actually. I came here after receiving my my PhD, which I got in Japan, actually. And after spending time in Japan, I wanted to come back to Southeast Asia. And so actually, I went back to the States. I worked for Wells Fargo for about a year. And I was a loan officer, very terrible job for me. Good money, long hours, and Well, inside my basic job was to, you know, check people's credit and then give them a percentage point on how much money they would be able to borrow for a new home. Most of the time, my job was to tell people no. And it's a pretty stressful job, actually, especially being a black male in that industry, because I dealt with, you know, a lot of white customers. And when I tell them no, they always assume there was somebody else to talk to. And that really drove me kind of insane, that because it's an ongoing thing that happened. Finally, I just decided to put my degree to the test, and I thought I would come to China and at least teach as much as I can or could for maybe a year or two, and then go back home and then work at work for a university back in the States. But 1 year turned to two turned to three. My salary kept going up. I got healthier. I was eating better, moving more. And I was given a lot of benefits at the university I'm with now. And, I just really didn't look back. Got a nice bit of money stashed away. And, you know, retirement is on track. And I guess that's it. I mean, the short of it is, you know, for financial reasons, but also I'm actually fulfilling what I wanted to do. I always thought I was, well, even my professors told me I would probably be a very good teacher if I chose to go that route, and I did. So it's a job I love, and I'm paid well for it. So, I mean, that's about it.
Who can complain about that? Work you enjoy, and then you get well compensated for it. Particularly, we just talked about workplace racism. Oh, man, we got this nigger here. You're going to tell me he's going to deny me a loan, and that's it? They don't have a white man that overrules this nigger? You just have some coon up here, and he can just tell us no, and that's it? Like, oh, man, I can only imagine, but we just spent a good chunk of time.
4 years.
Talking about, you know, that exact type of thing. Workplace racism, Fridays. That's program one of the day. So you've been hanging out over there teaching. As I stated, you were with us before. You had already gone through the quarantine. So just briefly, again, for listeners, you all, when did the quarantine start for you? How long you went through that? And what's it been like since the quarantine has been, or I guess they've eased restrictions? What's that been like?
Okay. Well, the quarantine lasted almost 2 months, from the end of January to, let's say, mid-March. It was situation I was kind of, I wasn't ready for, but I got adjusted well. We had to stay in our apartments. And we were given, basically like some small vouchers to go out of our, apartments for food, you know, supplies. But never more than twice, every 2 days, we were allowed to go out. Now, I know for some people may think maybe that, wow, it's still, you know, going outside and having contact with others. The thing is that the good part, or I shouldn't say the good part, but I guess I can explain this. As I mentioned before, our phones were tracked. So basically, wherever I went, the security guards, the police, you know, the state police, they would know exactly where I was at all times when I left my apartment. And so when we come back to our apartment, like when we have food or whatever, we come back with whatever, anything that we buy, the security guards would take a ticket from us. And if we didn't have that ticket and we had left and tried to come back without a ticket, then that would be an automatic trip to Corona Jail, where you would stay for over a week, even if you test, if you're not tested positive for it. So you would just be stuck there, and then they'll tell you, okay, do what you're told next time. So it was quite strict. What I did is, as I mentioned before, started doing yoga to keep myself in shape. Went to predominantly did I have dairy at that time? Oh, yeah, pretty much a vegan diet. Okay, I did. I do remember having milk once during that two-month period, but pretty much that's it. I ate a lot of vegetables. I dropped some weight. Felt a lot better than I had maybe the last couple of years because, you know, when I'm working, I'm often in my office, and then I'm sitting down. I have office hours. Students come in, and I'm sitting. When I'm lecturing is the only time I'm kind of standing up or moving, so without working and being in the house, that I started to notice my, I wouldn't say bones, but my muscles just feeling a little bit frigid, you know, because I just wasn't moving. But I started doing that. I started doing yoga, working out, eating better, and still trying to keep that up now. Let's see, the quarantine has been lifted for well, it's not even considered a requirement by the government, I don't think, anymore. But they don't have to make it a requirement because everyone is wearing it. And so if I try to sometimes be a supermarket or someplace, if I go in and I don't have a mask, they will turn you away. I don't want to say everything is rosy here already because there's been a resurgence of COVID in the northeastern province, Jilin province. And even in Hebei province, where, of course, you know, the epicenter, Wuhan, had it. We found six or seven new cases as of yesterday. And we don't know who those people have had contact with. So, for the most part, the authorities are saying that they have most of, that these are just very isolated places and it's under control, but I don't know. I'm a little worried, but I'm hoping that is the case. I have students coming back, and right now the senior students came back this week, junior students next week, sophomore and freshman, and subsequent weeks after. So they're coming back in stages, and so I will have my first classes and. Auditorium. I'll have my first classes this upcoming week, this Monday. So I'm a little excited for it, but you know, it's going to be, I'm not going to lie, it's going to be weird with a mask over my face and all of my students masked up too, but it's a precaution that we need to take. So, yeah, but that's what's going up to now.
Okay. What province are you in?
I'm in Chongqing. Yeah, it's right in the center, right above or right below Sichuan province, which is at the heart, right in the center of the country.
Okay.
So I spell that Chongqing. Again, Chongqing.
Got it. Okay. Wow, so you all are going back to school, or slowly integrating students back in beginning Monday. Masks are required, even though they're easing restrictions and kind of getting back to normal. But you said it probably would not be government mandated because people are wearing them anyway, which is odd because that has become like a battleground here in the States. I don't know if you've seen the reports, but President Trump, I think, said specifically that it's not for him. He's not wearing a mask. We had people for workplace racism, people who work at the courthouse. So these are not, you know, just Walmart employees or McDonald's or what have you. So, you know, civil servants, court documents and all that type of thing who were posting on social media. You know, if I don't want to wear a mask, then damn it, that's my right. You can't tell me to wear a mask. If me and my child don't want to put one on, then, you know, that's our right. We're American citizens. There's been, you know, widespread sentiment of that sort across the country, not just one or two people, but like large chunks of the population, white and non-white people, even some cows listeners who've taken that position that the masks are totally ridiculous. I don't know. Just can you contrast? Because I don't think with the regime that they have in China, I don't think you all have people who are allowed to come out and protest and say, I'm not wearing a mask. And, you know, this is ridiculous. I don't think that sort of thing would you be in quarantine jail over there. Can you just contrast having large numbers of people out saying they're not going to, and not wearing masks, not doing it and saying it's ridiculous to do so?
Okay. So see, the thing is, I think one of the myths about China is that there is like a complete police state where you aren't allowed to do much here. If people wanted to organize, because I've seen organized people here, complaining about all sorts of things, but never a situation like this. I don't know. People here just get it. It's dangerous. This thing can kill you. It can kill your children. And even if you survive it, there might be a chance it could pop back up on you in like 2-3 years. So nobody here wants the virus. So we know that one of the, and when I say we, I just say people here in China. We tend to have an idea that, pretty simple idea, that a mask is one of the best ways to keep from catching the airborne version of COVID-19. And so we just wear masks. It's normal. It's not, I don't think it's something we think about. And when I say, I don't want people to think I'm concluding myself as a Chinese person. I am not, but I'm just speaking as a person here. And generally, you know, when in Rome, so I see people wearing masks. I wear them. And of course, since the COVID-19 hit this area of the world, especially in this country, I mean, I was terrified of this thing. So for me, wearing a mask and washing my hands I didn't feel like any of my rights were, that never even occurred to me. It never popped in my head. Like, oh, the government's going to make me wear a mask. Attica. It just didn't pop up in my head. I just simply knew this could protect me. And I'm still washing my hands every time I come back. I go outside, I come back, I take off my mask, I wash my hands. I still do it. And I'll probably do it all year if I have to. But no, I never see it as like someone trying to force me to do something and my rights being taken away. And I don't think any Chinese person I know has that kind of mentality that you see in the United States.
To your knowledge, are there is there a significant group of individuals in China, anywhere in the country, so-called, who think all of this is a hoax of some sort, that there is no virus and, you know, something else nefarious is afoot, whether it's 5G or weather manipulation? Are there any groups like that in China?
There's no groups. There, you know, you'll get pockets of people who will just post something on the Facebooks of China, Weibo. I'll spell that W-E-I-B-O, Weibo. It's pretty much the Facebook of China, or some people might say the Instagram, either one, but it's the most popular platform. And every once in a while, somebody will put up something that, you know, easily gets shut down quickly. But it's usually it's not about any conspiracy of a fake virus. Most of these people who post something that's just, you know, a theory about something, is just that not enough people are being, weren't enough people being counted as dying from the disease. That's what you see more than anything. But you don't hear anything about, you know, Bill Gates, like, hopping around the world trying to kill people. That, you know, that just, you don't hear that here at all. 5G, I've spoken to no one here who believes that 5G has anything to do with spreading the virus at all. Yeah, it just, the only time I've heard this stuff is, you know, when I use my VPN and I watch, and I'm looking on Facebook and seeing some of my, we call them Facebook friends, but I don't like to use that term so loosely, but a lot of people that I'm still in contact with, I see them posting some things like this, and Gus, I want to tell them, I want to write in these, you know, when they post these things, I just don't want the stress of arguing with them afterwards, because I know what's going to happen. I'm going to be called brainwashed by the evil red Chinese communist, and I don't know what I'm talking about. So I don't deal with it. But I want to so bad, because, yeah, I'm seeing a lot of ignorant things being written and theorized about this virus.
The Rona truthers are thick worldwide. I mean, they're in the UK as well. We talked to Toyin Agbetu and, you know, about the 5G and other conspiracies that they have, but certainly here in the US. But I mean, what I've said consistently, when the president comes out and says maybe we can inject disinfectant, bleach of some sort, shine ultraviolet light, I'm not going to wear a mask. He said, the president, they were playing that audio back today. He said sometime in early March that this is not that big a deal. It's nothing to, you know, worry about. Mm-hmm. We're not concerned. I mean, when you've had that sort of attitude coming from the White House for the past 2 months, it is not surprising. And in addition to thousands, not one or two, but like thousands of white people going out and protesting, sometimes frequently with guns, saying that COVID-19 is a lie. This doesn't exist. You're impinging on our Attica. You know, you're making me put a mask on. This is, you know, the worst thing ever. When you have been saturated with that for about 2 months, it certainly can, you know, cause confusion, or at least make you question, you know, is this for real? Is this legitimate? I don't know. Like, it can cause confusion. And there is so much confusion, I feel, about everything that's happening. I guess it's just with the...
But quick. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, quickly. I just wanted to say, really quick, I'm sorry. I forgot the initial question you're asking. You had mentioned Donald Trump. And, like, right now, he is the hottest topic here.
Hmm.
People, you know, they've got all kinds of names for him. I can tell you some of them in Chinese, and I can give you the translation.
Let's hear a few.
My favorite one, they have Ben Don. Ben is bad, and Don is egg. So when you call someone a bad egg here, it's like if a chicken hatches a bunch of eggs and you're cracking open eggs and you see one that's bad, you know, you toss it away, you throw it away. Or if that bad egg incubates, it's going to have a stupid chicken. So a lot of people call him Ben Don. And especially the people who ask me if I'm American, or actually they just ask me what country I'm from when I tell them. And the first thing they ask is about Meiguo Zhongtong, Meiguo, America, Zhongtong, president. Actually, I'm getting tired of it now, to be honest. Every time I run into somebody, some days when I don't drive, if I take a taxi, pick up a friend from the airport, this happened last week, actually, the teacher had came back. And so I took a taxi out to meet him and come back to the school. And the entire taxi ride to the airport, which is about 45 minutes. Ride, the entire time he's talking about Donald Trump and asking me what's wrong with us. And but they find him exciting because they cannot imagine somebody so stupid who's become the president of the U.S. And the other one, Bao Pilong. The other one, they call him Bao Pilong. This one is a little bit more raunchier. Can I explain this one? The sanitized version. Basically, it means somebody who has intercourse with someone in their family, and or someone, the product of somebody who had intercourse with somebody in their family. So I'll just leave that to your imagination. But that's pretty, I never heard anyone say this about President Obama, let's see.
Bush the second before that? Were you there?
I was here the last 2 years, I think, almost, George Bush's presidency. I remember people just being angry about his foreign policy. You know, the Iraq War, Afghanistan War, things like that. But nobody was using these kind of terms for him. As funny as it sounds, a lot of Americans who had their livelihood here, who went back home during the holidays, I can only imagine how bad it is for them, because there's a lot of people who were here making a lot of good money. Maybe not in the education sector, but there's a guy named Lloyd that I know from Detroit. He worked with a car agency here. A car manufacturer. And his paychecks were impressive. And now he can't come back. And I don't know what plans he made, but I know that for him to leave the auto floors of Detroit to come here, it was kind of a big move, you know. So, and I think the biggest reason was, from what he had told me, it was just, you know, the money was so good. He has a son who's going to be going to college soon, and, you know, they already set some money aside for him, but, you know, this way it wouldn't eat into retirement. And so he made this move here, and now he can't come back. And the company hasn't even given up that he can come back. So, and a lot of this has to do, just specifically Americans and Italians. Italians and Americans, really. But people are really afraid of us. Right? So every time someone asks me if I'm from, you know, where I'm from, and I say America, I have to tell them I didn't go home. I've been here since last summer. So I haven't gone back to the U.S. And I can just see a sigh of relief on their faces. You know, because, yeah, they really are afraid of us. Because they've seen the protesters, they've seen the guns, and they see people without masks. Yeah, and they just, and they always ask me, well, what's wrong with these people? And then and you can hear them say in English, merit and the light freedom. And I'm like, I try to explain, like, I guess everybody likes freedom, but I think, yeah, this is something different. And we can go, I have a, you know, an idea about that. Something that I actually next week, I know my Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I have courses, and this is going to be the central topic from the first day, because I'm pretty sure all my students have these questions. They're going to want to know, what is wrong with you people? And so I spent about a week preparing what I'm going to tell them. And maybe we can go into that later if you'd like.
For sure, for sure. I remember when you were here just, I guess, a few weeks back, and when all of this got serious for you all over in China, as we were talking about at the beginning of the year, and it's like, hey, you know, should you go home, should you go back? And you said, of course, I thought about that, but then, you know, I didn't want to infect my family if I was asymptomatic, and then, you know, being on a plane, that's dangerous too. The most dangerous place to be in the world is here. Like, I mean, this is the worst place to be. And then to be in that sort of environment with the total chaos and confusion that we've had here. We talked about that last time. It's not really been a well-coordinated federal response. And then the protesters and people protesting wearing a mask, protesting staying at home, protesting closing the gun stores. They even in Wisconsin, they had a court order that declared that the governor did not have the constitutional authority to declare a stay-at-home order, and they overturned it. Open things back up, that was that. I mean,
yeah, I saw that. Now, that was shocking. I saw that, but I heard that it was and it was all ideological. I heard that there was a really contentious battle with those judges, and it fell on party lines. Of course, the Republicans, I don't know what it is about them. They just, maybe they want people to die. I don't know. But it seemed like Republican judges, Republican governors, and I'm not a registered Democrat. I'm not into, you know, the Autobot, Decepticon, you know, Republican Democrat thing. I see them both for what they are, but that's what I saw that about Wisconsin actually. That was quite shocking, and I saw and Gus, tell me if I'm wrong. Wasn't there a controversy? Somebody like hung her in effigy. There was a doll that was supposed to represent. Oh no, maybe that was the governor of Michigan.
Well, they have done so much. Go ahead.
No. I'm sorry. I just wasn't sure which state it was, but I saw that yesterday, and I made a screenshot of it. It's going to be in my presentation because I saw that and I was thinking, wow, these people really.
It's been so much.
There's something. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say briefly, it's just been very widespread in terms of in Michigan, the threats. That's where they had the armed whites. It was lots of them, and they came back repeatedly threatening lawmakers and had signs and things. So it easily could have been there. But this has been in lots of places. In California, they were out at the beaches protesting because they closed the beaches down, so they were upset about that and had signs out about Governor Newsom. Elon Musk said, you know, I'm not going to close down our Tesla factory. We're opening back up. So, I mean, it's been very widespread throughout the country. It started even in South Carolina. I think before you were with us in April, in South Carolina, in March, like immediately the governor had just said, hey, we need, you know, to shut things down. This is serious. Let's, you know, hunker down for a minute. And immediately, you can't tell me to close my gun shop. Like, what are you talking about? We have rules. And that's again. So, yeah, it's been widespread. It easily could have been Governor Whitmer in Michigan. But there's been, and it could have been multiple folks because that's been so widespread. And it's been, I can't say Democrat or Republican, but it looks like almost exclusively individuals classified as white who have been out armed. I think they had a brawl in Michigan today. In fact, I looked at that brief. I didn't even get a chance to look at all the details, but they had a fight that broke out. And I said, that's not a surprise. You've had armed people hanging out up here yelling for 2 weeks now. Why am I surprised that there would be a brawl that would break out? Like, it's just been, and again, none of that seems conducive to stopping the spread of the virus. If you're having some sort of brawl in a mob, that's not social distancing, probably. I could be in error. I was going to pivot to a different topic. Did you have one more thought? We'll certainly come back.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Number one, if folks listening in want to take advantage, get a question in, a person who has been hanging out in the area of the world known as China throughout all of this quarantine and insults, blame back and forth, China lied, and they've been deceptive, they lied to the world, and they're covering this up, or they unleashed this on the world, and they should, you know, be punished. If you want to take advantage and ask a question, dial in 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see, I have two quick ones and then we'll get to it. Let's see. Number one, here, the part of that protest movement, and you're not particularly from individuals classified as white, you're not going to tell me what to do, stay at home, wear a mask, etc., etc. Part of that has been, you're not going to make me get a vaccine. We've had medical professionals, doctors, epidemiologists on the program, all of them in unison have said, no chance for a vaccine this calendar year. They take a while to develop. This would be something down the road, 12 to 18 months away. Yet and still, a large number of the folks out protesting have been saying, I'm not taking a vaccine. We've had listeners, callers who've raised concerns about that. What is there even dialogue about a vaccine in China? And what does that conversation sound like over there?
From what I know, there's Chinese scientists who are working on a possible vaccine, but it's not something that you hear that they're trying to do quickly. You know, it's, you know, as with any vaccine, if there is a vaccine for something, it needs to be tested for years. And I know for a fact in China, they don't really have any, their Food and Drug Administration agency here is not, it's state controlled and it has there are no private companies or entities that can affect it in any way. So no quid pro quo. So if there is going to be a vaccine, if I'm still in China, I'd say 5 years, maybe there'll be a vaccine. But here is just about just prevention and just keeping it from spreading, which as far as I can tell, I've been back outside for a long time and I haven't seen any sick people. People just wear their mask and it looks like everything's kind of gone back to normal now. But I think it's because of that, the strict, rigorous isolation. But as far as the vaccine, most people aren't even talking about it right now because I think the most practical thing is that we try to avoid, walking around without a mask and, you know, that's probably the best way to prevent it right now. So, and if there is a vaccine, there's no one here that I've talked to who has any theories of nefarious workings if there is a vaccine. So here, I think maybe two people I know even brought up a vaccine possibly in all of these months. It's not really something people talk about.
Interesting contrast. Okay. When you were with us in April, we talked about the abuse of some of the African immigrants, students who were there. You brought up the point that some of these folks had overstayed their visa, and that's why they were attracting some of the attention, running into problems because they're doing, you know, they're serious about border enforcement and making sure that people have been screened and contact tracing and all of that. So, and you even talked about punishing folks who rent to these people if they have not been screened and checked and all the rest of it. Recently, like in the past 10 days or so, there have been numerous reports that they have, in fact, made government new laws to try to prevent mistreatment of Africans because people won't rent to them. Had a number of interviews in Al Jazeera, BBC, a number of widespread reports. We started off our broadcast, I guess for you this afternoon, for us this evening, with the report from the BBC talking about the experiences where folks are saying this is terrible, where they're just focusing on us as though we are the disease. What are your thoughts on that? What have you seen in terms of that development over the past few weeks or so?
Well, last time we talked, I think maybe the week after, it got really bad. A lot worse than I thought it was. And actually, I wasn't expecting, you know, the limited information I had was that, you know, in Guangzhou, there's always kind of been, you know, tension between the, you know, the African, the students, migrants, workers, whoever they are, whatever job or business they have, the, you know, African community in Guangzhou and, you know, the, of course, the native Han Chinese, you know, they have this, you know, there's a tension between them. And there's always been like some forms of discrimination there. I didn't know how bad it was. I mean, until, like I said, about a week after we talked, it seemed like it ramped up really bad, the treatment of, and I'm talking about Africans who actually had the app, they had their test that they can show that, you know, they don't have the virus, and people were still not letting them in. The infamous McDonald's photo, popped up right after we talked, and I can admit I was really, really upset about this. And I was, you know, talking to some of my Chinese counterparts, and I would consider friends, Chinese friends. And I would talk about this with them. And, you know, I had about half of them, you know, try to make excuses and, you know, oh, China, we don't like discrimination. And maybe it's just that one place and they're not, you know, I heard a lot of that. Then there was the other half who was just like, yeah, it's wrong what they're doing. But that's what they're doing. And so I got really upset about this, and I thought to myself, one thing that I know about this country, the mentality of the people here, is that they even have I wish I could think of that. It's an idiom. But basically, I remember the translation is, if you dress yourself up as dinner, don't expect not to be eaten, something like this. And it's something that they often say, about themselves during the, you know, 19th century. Where they had their, they call it period of shame. You know, foreign powers and others bullying them, and, you know, Japanese invasions, U.S. trying to sneak on the borders in Korea, then in Vietnam. And they lost millions, and economy wasn't doing so good. And as I said in our previous conversation, most people are one generation out of poverty. So they have this kind of mindset that, well, there's people being treated like that basically because there's no respect for them. So it's easy to do that. And then it took the national government, it took Beijing to tell the area of Guangzhou and its mayor, the mayor and, you know, other officials. Yeah, they've made laws. Okay, you cannot do this. You can't deny people entry to any place if they have their, you know, bill of health, you know, on their app. They should be good to go. And now there's numbers and even a part of the Weixin app where you can report people if they, you know, taxi drivers refuse to pick you up or a supermarket won't let you in, things of this nature. And part of that, I think, had to do with, of course, the federal response, but also something that I really enjoyed seeing was a lot of people on the continent of Africa, they started to ransack and burn down Chinese businesses. And Chinese mines started shutting down in the continent. And people were talking about kicking them out. And then I saw the swift action, you know, to help out, you know, brothers and sisters in Guangzhou. And then there was a swift action kind of after I saw what was happening back in the continent. And this just wasn't one country. It was several countries where they saw what was happening to people in Guangzhou, and they weren't having it. And, you know, of course, they can't go to China and protest, so they did so at home. And, yeah, shut down mining projects and, you know, projects that were in the Belt Road Initiative that China has with some countries in Africa. And so basically, the Africans decided they're not going to dress up as dinner. And I think that is what, that's what warranted the federal response.
Context of white supremacy, globalization, as they say. Really quick before I get to the callers, you said that you now things look like they're slowly getting back to normal. When you go out, people obviously still wearing masks and such. You said you're not really seeing people that are sick. Were you seeing people sick before? And specifically, like, details, if you were seeing people sick before, because there were talk about suspicion and confusion. There were some reports that allegedly showed people, like, passing out and just really dramatic scenes that were allegedly from China when all of this first started. And there was doubt about whether this was happening because these photos seem to be atypical for what they have reported happens with COVID-19. So were you seeing people sick before? If so, what were the details?
Personally, during that time, it was never anything as dramatic as what I saw in Wuhan. The people just falling down in the street. But here in my apartment complex, I do remember seeing several masked doctors here with hazmat suits. And that really freaked me out. That probably meant somebody here sick. I heard it's just a rumor. I'm not sure, but someone told me that maybe some people came back in the early morning to remove someone. I do remember after that day of seeing those people in those hazmat suits that the elevators in my building were just sprayed down. You know, you can, as soon as the doors open, there's this real pungent odor of chlorine. And it's just something they were doing. That every day that would happen after And this was literally a day, maybe 48 hours after I saw those people in those hazmat suits. But as far as actually seeing people like outside falling on the ground and things like that, no, I just meant the social media. There was tons of videos showing these things. And I haven't seen any like that since. During the time when we were in quarantine, it would be every day a new post. I shouldn't say even a new post. You know, you see 20, 30, 40 videos. But now, just not so much. Actually, I haven't seen any. But I did see the report that the province in Jilin, they found some new cases, and also in Hebei. So and people can take that how they want, whether, you know, the videos could have just stopped because they didn't want to show them anymore. But I'm pretty sure that's not the case, because most of these videos are by, you know, they weren't like videos the government put out. These were just, you know, normal people posting videos and sharing with each other. So, yeah, you just don't see them anymore. You just see people outside under the sun and, you know, happy. They're out of the Rona jail. So.
Amen. Amen. Release me from Rona jail. Let's see. The number 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. That was one of the theories that a listener offered, that there's something fake about all of this, and this is just going to be an excuse to round up black people and put them in Rona jail, some sort of quarantine. That was one theory about all of this that I still don't see any evidence to support. Let's see. Caller in Florida, retired firefighter. Did you have a question for our black male caller in China? You should be with us. China, say it the way our president does. Did you have a question, sir? Are you with us? Just listening? Not sure if you hit your mute button or if you're just listening, but if you did have a question, you should be with us. We'll try one more time and then keep it pushing. Okay. If you are just listening, no worries. If you did have a question and are just, you know, maybe it's a little noisy for the time being, you need to step back in a little later, we will check in again. 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. One of the other theories that a listener raised, they also had doubt, suspicion about all this. And again, we have so much confusion, particularly in the States, for all the reasons I laid out before and many others, that they think what's happening is that by having all of these reports over the past month and a half, alleging that black people in the United States and in the United Kingdom now have been disproportionately impacted by this virus, that what they're trying to do is give the impression that this is a black person's disease. Does that make sense in the conduct that you're seeing towards Africans in China, that this is a black person's disease? Are you seeing that sort of logic?
In Guangzhou, maybe. And that's just, again, because of the quantity of people, of Africans or black people in that area. As I said, I'm in Chongqing. The province Guangdong, where Guangzhou is not too far from where I am, but, you know, you do have to get there by plane. If you drive, it's easily maybe 12 to 13 hours, maybe longer. But most people here, I don't think, at least where I live, I have not experienced what anybody has experienced in Guangzhou yet. And I think the reason is, of course, the amount of people who look like me in this area. There's not so many black people, I think, in this area of China. And for most people, I think even in Guangzhou, they know it's not an African virus. They know it. But they have a lot of, again, already some animosity and discriminatory practices with Africans in that area for a while. And the coronavirus just, was used as an excuse to further, this divide between the two communities. So, but yeah, outside of that area, no one in China is thinking of this as a African disease, not at all. They know where it came from. And for them, this is an American problem now because of how, from what they see, how careless Americans are being with it. So it's something to actually, I'm a little worried about myself because I'm still thinking right now, when do I get to go back home? Because now this is, in their eyes, in my eyes too, this is an American problem now, more so than anything else. And, long story short, and China is not seen as an African disease at all. In Guangzhou, people are trying to make it out that way. But that's based on their own prejudice they had before, I think.
Much obliged for the response there. I've kind of said that in some instances where I've seen, because here in the States, we've had conflicts between enforcement officers and black people, either for not wearing a mask or they did have a mask on or social distancing, that sort of thing. But it's been, that sort of thing was happening before we had any concern about the coronavirus, like black people being mistreated and treated rudely by enforcement officers is, I've said that for years. I don't even like following those reports because that happens every day. Like, there's nothing new where I can point to and say, oh, wow, look at what they're doing as a result of the coronavirus. Like, yeah, kind of the same old for the most part. With, I'll check in with our folks who dialed in as well. Let's see, with making sure I go through all of the interesting theories that have popped up in the States, just to make sure that the prediction made in March about this having a greater impact on black people, that's one that's been presented as well. Now, you, a month before we heard anybody say anything, thought that black people were going to have a tough time, and even some of that white defiance, you predicted that. There are black people in the States who say, I do not believe these statistics about black people being impacted. White people lie, which they do. White people lie, and I do not believe any of these statistics. They're just lying to give that effect that this is a black person's disease. I don't think that what's being reported is accurate at all. Some of that is even filtered into the kind of, there's no Rona, but at minimum, they're lying, and black people are probably sick and dying from other things. You've got racist doctors who are doing racist things in the hospital. So, some of this is probably not even virus related. What are your thoughts as someone who predicted that coronavirus is going to have a disproportionate impact on black people?
I tried to, the prediction I made was just based on, what I know of my country, what I know of the state of black people in my country. I know that a lot of us, because of white supremacy, we have bad eating, habits, and, people with, there's a term for it now. I heard in the U.S. Basically people who have, like pre-existing conditions. I forgot the term.
Comorbidities?
Yes, comorbidity. That's it. For me, I knew that would be a problem because it was a problem here. Okay, so so people who had diabetes and who had asthma, you know, high blood pressure, hypertension, if you know, like to use the medical term, these are all things that would make it harder for people to fight the virus. Because all three of those things I just mentioned, you know, they weaken the immune system. And so I was telling people, I was just sounding the alarm to everybody I knew. So I would just jump on Facebook and just send like a mass message to everybody that, you know, who was close to me or whatever. Some people took it seriously, most didn't. And as for the white people going nuts, I thought was something I knew was going to happen too, because I know how uncomfortable it was to be kind of in quarantine here. It wasn't the greatest thing, but here in China, they the political system is quite different. So put enough police on the streets, and told people, this is what you have to do, and there is no if, ands, or buts about this. You don't like it, we'll haul you off to jail. And the thing that saves, this is going to sound funny, but the thing that saved China was the absence of white racists with guns. So if this country would had a bunch of Americans all throughout the country, and guns were legal here, I guarantee you the same thing would be happening here. I was worried, and my brother is my second eldest brother. He is a gun owner, and the message I sent him back in February, I think the first week of February, I told him, get to the store and get your ammunition stocked up. And I wasn't expecting any, post-apocalyptic world, but I was expecting white folks to show out. And that actually is exactly what I told him. And I think I mentioned him before. He's in the northern part of, he's just a suburb right outside Chicago, Mundelein. And there's not so many black folks there. So they're kind of surrounded by white folks. And it's sad because my first thought, of course, was I hope everybody stays safe there. I know they're not going to be doing quarantining like they should back home. But I was worried also about the white folks surrounding them and how they're going to put him in danger. And we I thought in both ways, but because white folks would go to the streets and, they don't like to take orders from nobody. And, because that's usually what they do. They give the orders out. That's how they feel. So I worried that would happen, and then it would spread. And then a lot of those same white folks who are going out protesting and doing all the things that they're doing, then they're going to get the virus and then go to the hospitals full of black folks who got to take care of them. I worried about that. And then I worried about white folks in a time of what they perceive as a crisis. You can remember Hurricane Katrina and white men and guns. And I knew that this was going to happen again. And now we're starting to see people die. They're hunting down people in trucks. It's almost as if this is liberating for them on two fronts. They get to defy the government and harm or murder black people at the same time. They're having a good time right now. I'll just leave it at that.
Defy the government, terrorize black people. And it's been a lot of that I was going to see because it's been so many instances. I just did the program talking about how I was accosted by a suspected race soldier just checking my mailbox in front of the house. Where he's, you know, accusing me of being a looter. I had a key, not a crowbar. And then they've had lots of other reports. It was a black family in North Carolina. They were in their house. A white mob came to their house. One of them featured an off-duty enforcement official asking the interrogation, what are you doing? Do you know Joe Bob? Where were you 2 days ago? Where were you this morning? Asking them all these questions, and they I don't even know what you're talking about. Try to close the door, stuck the foot in the door. Coon, you're going to talk to us right now. And it's like this went on and on and on before they left. They had a different case also in North Carolina, Scotty Reed, where it was an attempted black family. You had the so-called father, attempted mom, and they had their two children, very young, under 2 years of age. They're out walking, and the protesters, white mob, they got guns and everything. And one of them, I think, had a rocket launcher, not just, you know, like a 22 or something small, a rocket launcher. So they go by this white mob of protesters, and the black male speaks up and says, hey, you know, get away from my family. I've got my children. You know, get away from us. Get away from us. One of the protesters with a pipe wrench, not just, you know, a wrench that's, you know, like a foot, couple of meter. I mean, we're talking, this was about a meter. It was about a yard. It was massive. Like, he had it over his. Sorry about that. Lost my signal, had to dial back in on the broadcast line. Sorry about that for our listeners. I think we should be back and ready to roll. It's like, what is going on here? I dropped my whole signal. I was trying to just emphasize, because you were talking about the violence that was a part of what you were saying was going to happen, and the violence that's been happening here in the U.S. I said, you know, what happened with my mailbox situation, and then they had a family that was out in North Carolina. They had the one black family. They were in their house, and a white mob accosted them. That happened just this week. This wasn't related to the Rona at all. This wasn't, you know, why aren't you wearing a mask, or, you know, why haven't you been sanitizing or anything like that? Can we borrow some toilet paper? They just came up asking them questions about somebody else, somebody who didn't even live there. Like, where's this person at? When did you last see them? All this stuff. They tried to close the door and leave. They stuck their foot in the door and would not leave. They had an off-duty white enforcement official in this mob as well, probably armed. They had a different case in North Carolina where it was a black family. They were just out walking. It was the attempted father, the attempted mother, and they had their two children, very young children, like under three. And these white protesters are out. One of them had a rocket launcher. They've got their long rifles and everything. And the black male is like, hey, stay away from my family. We're not a part of that. We're just trying to get a little sunshine. That's all. And then one of these white guys, he comes over with a pipe wrench. And it's not like a pipe wrench that's small, something you could just carry around in one hand. Like, this is like a yard, a meter long pipe wrench. It's so huge. He had it like over his shoulder, lugging it. Like, you could kill somebody with this, like, easily crack their skull and, you know, DOA. And they're like, what are you doing? Like, we're just out with our children and you're coming up accosting us about, you know, you're not going to push us around. You're not going to tell us what to do. Yeah. And all the rest of it. I mean, anywho, let's see. I'll make sure. Did you all hear anything about those cases? What happened to the family in North Carolina, the family that was out walking, the violence that's happened against, but even the social distancing enforcement in New York, they were talking about, I think it was like 35 out of the 40 summons that were issued for violations of social distancing in New York were given to black people, not black and brown people.
Black folks, yeah.
Just black. Have those reports been getting over to China?
Actually, CCTV 5, you know, state TV, all channels of it. This one you'll find most of the news. I've seen at least twice. And they're kind of reporting on how it's affecting a lot of black people in America, but also how black people are. You know, they made this point, a lot of black people unfortunately working in these hospitals, and also they're getting the virus more than, you know, white people in America. And they have talked about, like, this kind of mob-like violence in the States. And sometimes when people ask me, oh, what's wrong with, you know, you Americans, I'm quick to check them on this. I'm like, no, there's something wrong with white people in America. I tell them this all the time, that it's almost as if, you know, I don't know if they purposely do it, like they want to omit them, but or single them out, you know, sort of like they do in Guangzhou. They should be able to, you know, distinguish all of these videos that keep sharing on social media with these white people and their guns and doing, you know. Very rarely do you hear someone mention they're white. And but when I talk to people about this, it was pretty much every day, I tell them, no, these are white people. You know, there's a system of racism, white supremacy. It's global, and it's really horrible in my country. And these are white people who, oh, okay. And then when they accept that, they will, well, why? And I say, well, if you felt you were supreme over everyone else, then this would be, you know, they live for moments like this. You know, racist white supremacists, that's the thing. I, you know, because some people say, oh, all the white people like this. I'm just like, of course, not all of them. And, you know, this might even be a minority, but I just say, I just loop them all together, like, and let the good Lord sort them out, the good ones. That's something that I think we really don't have time for. To decide, okay, well, this person's good, this person's not good, you know, Sue Ann at the job is really nice to you, so, you know, you can keep your guard down. I think black people all over the country should keep their eyes open for any white person in their vicinity. Let's consider them armed, either a firepower or armed with stupidity, armed and dangerous. And because, yeah, I've been seeing this, you know, every time I log on, you know, to Facebook, I've been doing a lot of that lately. I just keep seeing video after video after video after video. And, I mean, I knew it was coming. I mean, I saw it coming back in, you know, February, March. I saw this coming. And I was hoping it wouldn't be this bad, but... And the thing is, it's probably, you know, and you always got to, you know, this one big case about, excuse me, if I can't remember his first name.
Ahmaud Arbery?
Maybe. Thank you. Now, one thing about this case that caught my eye is this was done almost 2 months ago. Now, same thing happened, as you know, because you've done plenty of shows about Katrina. A lot of those deaths, those extrajudicial killings, were done in the early stages. And, not, you know, there was some mishaps, you know, after the flooding and, you know, but before there was, you know, complete destruction, there was a lot of stories about black folks getting killed. I wonder how many Aubreys there are that didn't get caught on film. And I shouldn't say caught on film. That was a snuff film. Guy, you know, from what I'm understanding, this guy's behind them the whole time. The good old boy's got the guns. They're chasing down the Negro, and he's filming it all. I noticed he has an attorney now saying, you know, he's innocent. He didn't know what was going to go on, and, you know. Which I thought was interesting. When I found out he had an attorney and his attorney was on television, I was like, okay, that's a snuff film. So at the beginning of this, when those first, you know, stay-at-home orders happened, I wonder how many Aubreys there are out there. The truth is, we just don't know. So some people saying, you know, there are, you know, people dying in hospitals and they're saying it's the coronavirus. There might be people sent to the hospital, people saying it's coronavirus, and it was white folks who killed. I wonder how many of those stories there are. That's what I took from this Aubrey situation. Because this happened 2 months before. We're just not hearing about it now. And that there was a video. So, it just underscores how dangerous it is there in the United States now. And not armed. Or hardware. Both are essential. And right now, my folks are out there with hardware. They're armed with hardware and they're armed with stupidity. And that's a dangerous mix.
I do on this podcast to caution against referring to white people as ignorant or stupid. We have a lot of that in the current book that we are reading. If you are skilled enough, powerful enough to dominate people for centuries all around the world,
true.
You certainly cannot be too ignorant. But that notwithstanding, retired firefighter is with us, so we'll try again to see if we have his line working correctly so he can get his question in and the rest of the folks who are with us on the line. If you all have questions, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. There were a number of reported killings. Police killings, regular white people killings after Hurricane Katrina. We did a lot of broadcasts on that throughout the years, a number of programs about that. There's even documentaries about the killings of black males during the days of Hurricane Katrina and the levee failure in Louisiana. Mentioned again, hotspot now for the coronavirus. Nothing but bad news in the state of Louisiana, New Orleans specifically. I will say with the Mr. Aubrey situation, I don't even think they can blame that on the Rona in Georgia, because at the time he was killed 2 months ago, we were not exactly taking that virus seriously. So we weren't even under lockdown. Even here in Seattle, we weren't under lockdown at the time of the shooting. So definitely not in Georgia, because Seattle, Washington State and California were like ahead of the curve. So I know they were not under lockdown in Georgia. That was only like a couple days after Mardi Gras, really. So they can't even blame that on the Rona. That was just regular, normal time activity on the plantation. And I think there was two cases. Breonna Taylor, that was another one. I think both of those, that's just normal time activity on the plantation. They can't even say, oh, we were stressed or the Rona had us anxious and we didn't know they didn't have masks on, so we thought they were here to infect us and give us their nigger coot. Like, they can't even say that. It was back before all this started and just regular days on the plantation. Let's see.
Yeah, okay. Can we take it?
The retired firefighter in Florida, we'll try again. Did you have a question, sir?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yes. I had been noticing myself for years of people in the area that's called China, and I think even Japan, that, you know, average everyday persons would be wearing masks. Am I correct, sir?
Yes.
Especially
in Japan.
Okay. Yeah. So do you think with that as a culture in itself, kind of like assisted the more healthier point of view with this virus?
Mm. Oh, that's a good question. I would say so in Japan, yes. I spent 2.5 years in Japan. Did my final thesis there, Osaka University, and for me it was, and this is a long time ago, you know, give away my age, but nearly 20 years ago, and as a culture, in Japan, they wear a mask because if they ever get sick, they don't want to make others sick because it will stop production. The more people who go home sick, the less likely the factories are running. So people wear masks for that reason alone, not for air pollution or anything else. If they got, if they're ill, they don't want to make someone else sick. In China, you don't see it too much, except in the cities like Beijing and Tianjin, places that have high pollution. You would see people wearing the mask normally. And now I see it everywhere. But before, in Chongqing, the city itself, which does have pretty bad pollution, doesn't rival anything in Beijing or Tianjin, though, but it's, you know, it's pollution here. I would sometimes see people wear a mask. But it just wasn't something that you see all the time. But now it's everyone. Everyone is doing it. They don't want to spread the virus and they don't want to get the virus. So just before the broadcast, I went out to pick up a package. And one thing I noticed that kind of just something I didn't notice before, I saw a father and his child outside, and I saw the kid couldn't be more than 4 or 5 years old, and I saw him, you know, playing near the pond with this big mask over his face, and I could barely see his face, and I was just, that kind of became like, it was kind of surreal, because I just wasn't thinking that this was abnormal, because actually for where I live, this is abnormal. Japan, not so much, but yeah, here definitely abnormal. I would say most parts of China, it's abnormal to wear a mask every single day, but everyone's doing it now.
Okay. One more question. And the question is based on the assumption that you've been away from the Northwestern Hemisphere for a while, that is commonly called, quote unquote, the United States. What was your motivating factor for tuning into the context of white supremacy?
Actually, I was listening before I came. I believe so. I think I did. Or maybe it was my first year here. And to be honest, I'm not sure how I picked it up. Maybe it was something I saw on Facebook. And then I remember seeing, before the Black Talk Network, there was Talk Show? If I'm not mistaken, I used to listen to Talk Show.
Blog Talk Radio?
No, not Blog Talk. It was Talk Show. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, but I think that was the platform I started listening to it on. And this, many years ago. But my motivation, even after I found it, was this is something that I always did, even back in high school. I gave my parents, I gave my parents hell in high school because I refused to read. I refused to read Huckleberry Finn for a book project, and but I got had good parents that fought for me, and I ended up doing my book report on Soul on Ice. Now, this started for me in high school, so I always wanted to, I don't want to say buck the system, but, the system of white racism, white supremacy, but in fact, I guess that's what my motivation was. I don't know where it came from.
Okay.
It already
makes sense to me. It already makes sense to me on what you're saying. Basically, because my path has some similarities of basically searching for the truth, And you're going to, when you hear something that sounds like it it makes some sort of logical sense. You're probably going to stop and pay attention to it.
Yeah, and racism, white supremacy made me feel, as when I was very, young and growing up, went to two private schools and before high school, and my high school predominantly white. I didn't like the way I was singled out for things. What they would call, some people might call a positive way, or a negative way. It just seemed like a lot of people around me thought that for some reason I was beating them in the classroom, I was beating them on the court, I was beating them on the field, and they still walked around like I needed them in some kind of way. And I think that's what pushed me. Now, dare I say ego? Could be. I'm not sure. But I really wanted to know more about myself. And so these kind of programs, I've always been drawn to it. I think I can say this. This might give it up too much about myself. But I mentioned this before. I was born in Alton, Illinois. The private schools I was talking about, I went to in state capital, Springfield. And Springfield, Illinois is, I'm not sure if people know, but there was a pirate radio station in Springfield, Illinois, and you guys can Google this. It's called Human Rights Radio. And every day I used to have to fine-tune my radio to pick this up because the FCC tried for 10 years to bring this radio station down. And it was ran by a black man named Mbanu Kantaku. He was beaten by the police in Springfield and left 80% blind. And after that, he and his wife and children started. They started a pirate radio station, Human Rights Radio. Had some of the best guests and information, and I was hooked, and I was listening to this man every year in school that I was there. So I'm listening to him at night, and I'm going to school surrounded by white folks, and from that show I learned how to parlay myself at school. I learned how to not get too close to white folks. I knew how to check my temper if they made me upset, because I had a feeling that, you ain't better than me, and I'm smarter than you, because I'm listening to this every night, this radio station, and they're talking about all sorts of the origins of African civilization. They're talking about the heroes that we have in, the United States who, fought racism, white supremacy. And, but I think if you want, you can still go online. And I think he has archives of those shows. And eventually the FCC finally came and, literally busted through their door and just stole their equipment. And, but yeah, he's known as having the first pirate radio station in the U.S. Again, his name is Mbanu Kantaku. I wish I could spell his name off the bat, but I can't. But if you just look up Human Rights Radio, Springfield, Illinois, you'll be able to find that program. So this was a natural transition for me, because I've been listening to these kind of programs since high school.
Okay. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. Oh, look at there. So the spelling is MBANNAKANTAKO.
That's it.
There you go. You can check it out online, humanrightsradio.net, and check out some of their archived content, get more information. Importance of black journalism. Feel like we say that on a pretty regular basis. Long history, Minister Malcolm X, Ida B. Wells Barnett, lots and lots of black journalists who made an effort to get out information about white supremacy, racism, and how to help us solve this problem. We had a listener, she wrote in, you've been in China for such a long arrangement. Are you single? Are you in some sort of what they call romantic sexual arrangement, married, any of the above?
I'm still seeing the same woman I have for past 5.5 years. And she is from Addis Ababa. She is Ethiopian. So I'm still in that relationship. We're getting to that stage now where we're talking about marriage, and things like right now, things have got kind of complicated, but because there's a lot of things I need to do back home. I need to go back to the U.S. A lot of things I need to do. Pretty soon, I have to renew my driver's license here, so I have to get my driver's license states renewed. I don't know how I can do that. My mail. Also, when I'm transferring money, things are a little bit different now because of the coronavirus. Things that I need, papers I need to sign back home. That's who I'm with. That's who I've been with for the last 5.5 years. And before that, always single. No children. But, that's not the plan, to stay childless. But I still know. I don't know how long I'll stay here. But I don't know. This, again, a big problem is that I really don't know if I want to go back to the States. I don't know if I want to bring her to the States. And she's been to America before. She said it terrified her. So,
me too.
So I don't know how much more I can help alleviate some of those terrors for her. Because I'm not really so fond of, the place either. And I'm not sure if you remember, Gus, the first time we had talked, when I went to the Chinese embassy and I ran into a police officer. And, I'm just walking casually downtown Chicago, go to, Chinese embassy, and there was a police officer approaches me with hand on gun. Where are you going? What are you doing going in that building? Where's your ID? This is my first day back. And this just, it was just madness. So I can only imagine. Now, see, I'm kind of used to this behavior. And for Marie, I think she, definitely, what's her name? Sorry. For her, she couldn't take this, year after year, this kind of, feeling that, she can constantly be in danger into the hands of some white person, or black person, all around danger. But, all the guns and things like that, she's not impressed with. So, I think I've said enough about it. But yeah, that's my marital status, I guess, right now. I'm with someone. I'm with someone who's terrified of my country.
System of white supremacy is terrifying this region in particular. Absolutely. She's an intelligent person. Habesha, you said? She's from born in Ethiopia, Habesha. She's so-called African, classified as black.
Yes. She's from Addis Ababa. She's from the capital city.
Gotcha. Wow. Is she still in China right now, or is she back on the continent?
Yeah, she's still here. She's a professor as well.
Oh, right on.
She's at a different university than I am.
Okay, right on. Hope she's staying safe, wash your hands, social distancing, wear your mask, all that good stuff too.
Yeah.
Let's see. With the driver's license, I know because of the virus, they are changing, like they're waiving doing the driver's test in some areas. So I don't know. It might be something that you can do online or via mail if you have a mailing address in the States now, just because of all of the kookiness with this. So might be something to double check the policy to see, you know, if you have any other options, at least for the driver's license. Let's see. There is one important point. Racism, white supremacy is global, right? You have individuals who are classified as white all over the world. The UK, Australia, France, Germany, Canada, the United States, blah, blah, blah. You know, just going on and on. Argentina, blah, blah, blah. Lots of places. I have not seen white people, like, in Canada, out with guns, jumping up and down, protesting. I haven't seen white people in, you know, Argentina, France, Germany. I haven't seen that at all. Like, they have complained, but they have behaved for the most part. I haven't seen that sort of, you know, Angela Merkel will kill you and got an effigy and, you know, how dare you? We're Germans. You're not going to push us. We're like, it seems like it's something unique about the white people specifically born in the United States who, you know, have this sort of defiant nature, unless I'm incorrect. What do you think that is specifically about this region, the whites in this region?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked us this question because, you know, this is right into my background on politics. And also I have a degree in sociology as well. So I kind of mix these two things together. And because I've been asked this question, you know, even per capita, Canada has just as many guns as Americans, but they just don't kill each other the way we do. But in particular, I want to, you know, talk about the reason why white folks in America are acting a damn fool as opposed to other parts of the world. And again, there are several countries in Europe, too, where you still are allowed to have guns. The European Union is not all uniform with that. But my thoughts as a political scientist, but as a sociologist as well, I think the problem in America has been the simple fact that the Civil War has never ended. Black people were never made whole. There were never any reparations, as you see in Germany and places in Japan, places that also targeted ethnic groups, terrorized, killed, you know, did all sorts of terrible things to. America started out brutal chattel slavery, and then mass incarceration, lynchings, the terror, and the American government has done literally nothing to mend the hearts, the skin, the bodies of black people. So you still have white people who still see it. In Germany, I remember there was a documentary I watched when I was I think my sophomore year of college as an undergrad. And this documentary was about how Germany made compensation to German Jews and Polish Jews, you know, because of the Holocaust. Hundreds of billions that they gave their streets where they still have names of people who was murdered in that area or in the house. Everywhere in Germany, you walk down the street and you'll see signs of what your forefathers did to a group of people. So it kind of humbles them in a way. In America, this has never happened. You just have Yahoo cowboys who have never been punished for what they've done. And this is why they keep saying, racism was in the past. it's time to get over it, or slavery was in the past, it's time to get over it. But that's the thing. Every other country in the world with these kind of atrocities, even Australia, for what they did, the horrible things they did to the Aboriginal people there, they tried to make some recompense. It's not enough, but they did something, tried to do something. Again, not enough. But in America, and the thing about Australia, even when I said not enough, remember, it was an Australian who went to Christchurch in New Zealand and shot up people. Because in Australia, they still think, you know, they still have ideas in their head that, yeah, what we did to the Aboriginal people, we civilized them, they were stupid, and, you know. There's still people, I would probably guarantee there would be most white folk in Australia still believe that way. But America is special in the sense that the way it was formed, I mean, they didn't just kill a few thousand, they did kill millions. And then they stole millions. And then they beat, tortured millions for fun. These are sick people. And them genes keep getting passed on one by one by one. And you mix that with guns and a feeling that they can do anything they want, because this is their manifest destiny. Everybody is below them, especially their ex-slaves. And so, yeah, this is just a different breed of white person. And I really don't know another country where I could actually compare them to, except, yeah, like I said, possibly Australia. Of course, you find white supremacy in Great Britain as well. But again, yeah, you just don't see these menacing people walking around with guns threatening people. Americans do this, white Americans. This is fun for them. This is something they always want to do. They always want to impose their will. And for me, that is the link. Their callous disregard of what they've done to black people and Native American people, or Indians, however you want to say. And they never had to take account for it. They never had to. You know, people made a big deal when Bill Clinton apologized for slavery. It took until the 1990s for an American president to say, "My bad, I'm sorry." And even when he did that, it was controversial. That tells you the kind of man you're dealing with in the United States, man and woman and child. You know, if there was a huge reparations package, I don't care what time, but at least let's say 50 years ago, America had a multi-trillion dollar reparations package for black people. And this happened. Then it becomes, okay, a record of something that they did that they say, okay, this is horrible what we did, and as a government, as a country, as a people, make recompense for what we've done, what this country has done wrong. But this has never happened. So the country walks around believing they've done nothing wrong, especially white people. And they love the chance to actually get to tell us, we're not going to do anything for you. There is nothing better for them. That makes them feel great when they say, nope, no reparations, that'll never happen. I've seen that a lot. And when white people say, they say with a certain zeal, they put a lot into it, that'll never happen. And so, yeah, that's for me. I'm looking at it from a historical point of view. I'm not a psychologist, so I can't try to get into their psyche, but I'm just thinking based on the history and the response of the government of the United States, these people have never atoned for anything. And the happiest thief is the thief who steals and nobody knows he's stolen. And that's the white man, woman, and child in America, in my point of view.
Context of white supremacy. If any other folks, man, massive time difference. I'm just looking at it like it is, for me, 11. For the people on the East Coast, retired firefighter Florida and those locations, Georgia, Mr. Arbery, it is 2 a.m., like, woo, way past bedtime, while our guest here in China is chilling, enjoying a lovely, sunny Saturday afternoon, 2 p.m., like, wow, it is just great. Might go back and get me a little bit more sunshine. If any folks, if you are still awake, if you have a question that you want to sneak in before we allow our guest to go enjoy the rest of his Saturday, go ahead and get your hand up. Do not wait until the last possible moment. Let's see. Our other caller in Florida. Look at that. Hanging out with us 2 a.m. Other caller in Florida. Did you have a question for our black male listener in China?
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to guests, the hosts, the listeners and callers, and the guests. I had a quick question about the, I don't know, have you been seeing the reports about the insect species, the Asian giant hornet, I think that's what it's called. The reason I'm asking that is there's a secondary word that's been called, used, murder hornets, I think. And I think that's important because it looks like they're trying to associate that with, I guess, people classified as Asian. Because I've always heard the species referred to as the giant Asian hornet. Have you ever heard of, or seen any reports on that, sir?
Here it was just called hornets. I've seen the reports, especially describing them as, yeah, murder hornets. I couldn't believe that, but of course I could believe it too. It's just par for the course. But when I saw that, I thought, wow, they just, I mean, they show you it's like the coach shows you the plan before the play. Like, white folks really, they just show you this before you even try to figure anything out. Remember the Africanized bees and the reporters saying that it's more, you know, that's, Africanized bees are—they're more aggressive than the gentler European bees that we just. I'm not surprised. I heard the reports, but at least here in this part of the world where I'm at, nobody's afraid of these hornets.
Okay, thank you for the response, and I had just one last question. And just, I've been meaning to ask this as well. Have any of you seen any reports about crime increase or decrease, you know, on any news reports or anything? Because myself personally, I've only seen it once where they said crime has decreased, at least in the area of Florida that I'm in. And I find that interesting as well with the... with all of the white people coming out with guns, things like that, and going to different businesses, protesting and things. Actually, there was white women dressing up as nurses going to steal packages off of people's porches. So have any of you heard any reports about the crime increase or decrease?
I think maybe Gus would better for this one. I really don't know much about it.
All right. Much obliged, caller in Florida. Let me double check to see if other folks had any other questions that they wanted to make sure that they get in. Yeah, I'll give folks maybe another minute or so. As I said, we're hoping to have folks on from different parts of the globe over the next few weeks or so. Hopefully that will help to get a better understanding of exactly what is happening on the planet. Hopefully people can use logic in looking at different parts of the planet. I'm still not aware of any place in the world where they have taken the position that there is no coronavirus. Nowhere in the world. They have been announcing of late, though, that Brazil, the virus is spreading there. As I said, a new hotspot. We should have a guest on the program this coming Tuesday from Brazil to give thoughts and views. I've been saying for about the past, well, I can't say exactly a week, but close to a week, since they've been saying this, that the two locations in the Western Hemisphere with the highest population of black people, Brazil, the United States, those are now the two locations in the Western Hemisphere with easily the highest death rates, cases of the virus here. And Brazil is rapidly moving up like into the top five in the world because it's accelerating so fast, reportedly. Do you have any thoughts? Have they been reporting what's been happening in Brazil? Any thoughts about why? And even I guess I would add quickly, it seems like there is at least one correlation. The president there,
Bolsonaro.
Yeah, Bolsonaro, mm-hmm. Thank you. Seems to be talking in a way that is not taking this serious, just like the president here, and saying that this is not a big deal and we're not going to do the shutdown and all of that. Seems to be a major correlation and having a lot of black people, at least much more black people than anywhere else in this hemisphere. Any thoughts on what's happening in Brazil?
You explained it yourself. That's, you know, what is the one variable? Well, there's a couple. Large black population, both countries, and both countries have presidents who were absolutely oblivious to the care of their people. Just, you know, I have people calling me and asking me, is it true that, you know, Trump said people should take, you know, detergents and sometimes I don't know. I have to get online and like, did this actually happen? And then, you know, I just don't get surprised anymore now. But for a while, yeah, I'm just terrified. Listen to his responses. And I know that Bolsonaro in Brazil, not only does he talk like Trump, as far as ideology, they're also the same. You know, he's a very, sort of a narcissist fascist in many ways, just like Trump, Bolsonaro calls people sons of bitches who don't, who complain about, white supremacy that happens in Brazil. He wants to attack parts of the rainforest and, burn down places where indigenous people are. And says, in speeches, clearly what he thinks about, these indigenous peoples. They're not very smart. They don't contribute anything to the economy. I mean, he's brazen. You know, just a lot of those things, just like Trump. And I'm not surprised. I did see one report here in China about Brazil. But the thing is that Trump keeps saying so many crazy things it is America, too. So in their eyes, it's a bit more important than Brazil. Most of their trade is with the United States. Their contentions and their worldviews are polar opposite. Their competitors, number one, number two, economy. Who knows which one is number one, number two? It just depends on what economists you ask. But so that's why they, spend more time in America. And I think what they can't believe is that they always, even if they didn't like American foreign policy or domestic policy, they would, maybe some things they don't understand. They always respected it as a nation.
I don't see, but you don't see that anymore. You see them, people hear this thing, how did this guy become president? And he's probably going to be president again. What's wrong with the American people? They always ask me this. What is wrong?
Ain't no problem, so, brother. Bad air for another 4 years, man. No probably. You can tell folks that they can confidently, I forgot the pronunciation, but bad egg, you can get ready for another 4 years of bad egg. MAGA reigns. What is it again?
Yeah. Been done.
Been dung. Yeah. Been dung for another 4 years. Oh, I messed it again?
B-E-N, like Ben, just like the name Ben.
Right.
And then Don, D-A-N.
Ben Don.
So Ben, bad, yeah, Ben Don.
Ben Don.
Yeah, that just, yeah, bad egg.
Bad egg for another 4 years, no probably, guarantee. MAGA all the way, 4 more years.
Yeah.
Let's see, double check to make sure folks are good. I know it's so late. Need our rest, everybody. We'll just kind of continue to progress how things go. Hopefully, we can all safely just get to the other side of this and without loss of life, loss of income, anything else, keep our sanity together and get past all of this so that we can look back and just say, wow, that was a really crazy time, and we are really glad we got through it. Hopefully, we won't see anything like that for another 100 years at least. But we definitely appreciate you sharing a bit of time and insight. Hopefully, this is helpful to folks in other parts of the world just to try to get a better perspective, better handle on exactly what is happening on the planet. But we'll definitely continue to check in. If you see any information that you think would be helpful, send it our way. We will definitely stay in touch. Maybe we'll have you back on the program again, depending on how all this unfolds, the Cold War and all. But thanks again for sharing a bit of your Saturday. Get out there and enjoy the warm weather. We will definitely be in touch again soon, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Gus. And, everyone, just please, if you got a mask, wear them outside, please. I'm going to go out and enjoy the day. It is really nice today. Sorry not to rub it in, but I haven't
Cheers.
Seen a day like this. It's been raining for a long time, but I need to get out and get some vitamin D.
Vitamin D. I love it. Cherish the day. Our black male in China. Stay safe. Wash your hands. We'll try to do the same, and we will talk to you soon, good sir.
Okay. Sounds good. Take care, Gus.
Yes, sir. You too. Context of white supremacy. Take things seriously. We should have... Oh, yikes. Alrighty. Sorry about that. Hurt my ears a little bit. We should be back for tomorrow, less than 24 hours now, for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And again, on Sunday, Global Sunday Talk on Racism, I am very excited to hear from listeners in different parts of the globe. Wow, should be a hoot. Again, I hope folks are taking it seriously. I hope folks are staying safe, doing, all that they can to try to protect themselves, people that you care about, and what have you in the midst of all of this. Again, I hope, being able to talk to people in different parts of the world maybe will help people take this seriously as well. If you can find a location in the world where they are not taking this seriously, where they don't think such a thing as COVID-19 exists, it would be spectacular to talk to some of the folks there. I don't know where such a location is, though. Anywho, tomorrow, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, Sunday, 12 noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, and then we'll have two programs on Tuesday as well. Marquise Treve will be program number 2, joining us live from Brazil. Hopefully, we'll be a little bit more informed. Still learning, but a little bit more informed by the time we get to the middle or end of next week. We'll have a much more global perspective on all of this. Did any of the folks that are with us, any comments they need to get in before we call it a broadcast? ready for a bit, super late. Not surprised. I know he does a lot of Facebook checking. I don't know how much I'd be willing to hop online. I think he talked about that last time, saying that he didn't get on Facebook too much. He would just go kind of briefly and then get off, make sure you don't get in trouble anymore. I don't know how much Facebook checking I would be doing over there, but I was not surprised he had heard about the Ahmaud Arbery situation. They had heard about it in the UK. We had Mr. Agbetu on the program Tuesday. He was informed about that. He was on the front page of the BBC when I checked, I think Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday morning. So not surprised. Dead black male. News all around the world. Much obliged for folks tuning in. Hope it was worthy of your Saturday morning, Friday evening, depending on where you are for the folks listening live. We'll do it again tomorrow or later today, I guess, depending on your perspective. Again, sobriety would be best. I know it's the weekend and some people are still under lockdown and stressed about everything that's happening. Man, I don't think consuming alcohol, beverages and the rest of it, cigarettes, all of that, I don't think that's going to help us mitigate this situation in any way. Could make things worse, in fact. In addition to being sober, shouldn't be doing too much joyriding, going out and about, like if you have to go to work or what have you, get things for your offspring, groceries, whatever, errands, certainly. But under these conditions, we just talked about all the violence. Armed white hooligans have been out and about all over. That should be thought about anytime before we get in the vehicle. Sober. If we are going out, thoughtfully so, we are buckled up. If you're driving, you are not on the cell phone. Doing everything that we can to make sure we can minimize as best possible contact, unnecessary contact with race soldiers, badge or no, particularly under these conditions. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.